I'm Ryan Miller, Crops Extension Educator. Earlier this morning, we recorded an episode of the Strategic Farming Field Notes program. Strategic Farming Field Notes is a weekly program addressing current crop production topics. A live webinar is hosted at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays throughout the cropping season. During the live webinar, participants can join in the discussion and get questions answered. An audio recording of the live program is released following the webinar via podcast platforms. Thanks, and remember to tune in weekly for a discussion on current cropping and crop management topics.
Welcome today to our Strategic Farming Field Notes session. These sessions are brought to you by U of M Extension and also generous support from the Minnesota Farm Families to the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council and the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council. So today's session is on resources for crop disease ID. And my name is Liz Stahl, I'm an Extension Educator out of the Worthington Regional Extension Office. I'll be moderating today. We welcome Dr. Angie Peltier. She's an Extension Educator out of the Crookston Regional Extension Office. And we also have Dr. Brett Ahrens. He's the Director of the U of M Plant Disease Clinic. Brett, he is unable to join us live today, so we did have that part pre-recorded. He's actually off teaching a class session that overlaps with this program. So again, we'll turn it over to the recording. Hopefully everything works fine with that. But we do have Angie with us live today. So with that, I will turn it over to Angie. And Angie, we wanted to talk with you today a little bit about this Digital Crop Doc program that you have been leading. And could you just kind of start off and tell us, like, why did you start this Digital Crop Doc program and a little bit about what it's all about?
Sure. So thanks, Liz. We need to think back to 2020 and just how derailed everything became during the pandemic. So we had travel restrictions, you know, University of Minnesota Extension. Our goal was not to go out and be Typhoid Marys around the state and infect people. And so we still wanted to provide the services, though, that we had always provided. And so we assist growers, we assist crop advisors, oftentimes by making field visits. And we couldn't do that in a timely fashion during the pandemic. And so we thought, well, why not go online? Why not use the technology that is at our disposal? And so the crops team, Bruce Potter, all of Dean Malvick, all of our colleagues were game, and we developed Digital Crop Doc. Behind the scenes, we had Phyllis Bongard, who's behind the scenes in this program as well. She made it so that we have a digital platform so that people can make submissions and we can provide visual diagnoses. And so that's why it was started, and it's been going since 2020 now.
Yeah, so what is a submission process if somebody wants to submit a sample?
Sure. So another thing we understood during the pandemic is not every producer is well versed when it comes to the web. And so we didn't want to have a system where you needed to have a specific email address in order to make a submission. And so a person can, in their field, if they encounter a disease, the crops that we support are corn, soybean, small grains, sugar beet, and forages. And so if a person goes out to scout a field and realizes, wow, okay, something different is happening here, and I have no clue what is going on in my field, they can take several pictures in their field and very easily, without having to log on to anything, make a submission. So in order to make a submission, you need to attach pictures of what you're seeing. All one needs to do in order to find Digital Crop Doc online is just search in any search engine, Digital Crop Doc, and it'll be the first thing that pops up. So you find the website, and then you'll find a form on that website. So along with those pictures, we ask for context clues. So we'll hear from Brett Aarons in a bit. And I tend to think the same way as he does. In a way, it's a process of 20 questions. We're playing a CSI sort of game. We need to know, in addition to what we're seeing with the pictures that you capture, we need to know what else is going on in the field in order to arrive at a visual diagnosis. So, for example, how are the symptoms distributed in the field? Are they in patches? And that, a patch, especially if you think about it, patches that are of symptomatic plants that are in lower areas of the field, that might be something caused by an oomycete pathogen, for example, that tends to congregate and be favored by wet conditions, wet soil conditions. Is it evenly distributed across the field? That could give us a clue that maybe it has nothing to do with a biotic cause, but maybe it's something that we sprayed across the entire field. And so knowing how the symptoms are distributed in the field can help to provide us some clues as to what's going on. How are the symptoms arranged on the plant? Are we just seeing symptoms on the newest growth? Oftentimes that's what we would expect with viral diseases. Or is it in all old growth? Is it towards the top of the plant only, towards the bottom of the plant? And getting that sort of information can provide those context clues, some of those answers to the 20 questions we want to get answered, that can help to provide a diagnosis. Variety, hybrid, that can help knowing what resistance is included in your variety or hybrid can help to narrow things down as well. When did you make your last fertilizer, insecticide, fungicide, herbicide application? Sometimes we can have another example of symptoms across an entire field. Could be maybe we made a herbicide application that caused some injury. Knowing that is very important. What was your previous crop? Knowing that, so if you are in a continuous corn system, that can increase your risk of certain diseases, because so many of our diseases in the state, the pathogens that cause them survive in the residue from previously infected crops. And so if you have a lot of residue from previously infected crops and you grow that same crop over and over, that can increase our risk of certain diseases showing up. We also want your contact information. So you don't have to have an email address, but we need to have some way, one, to provide a diagnosis if it's something that offhand is relatively easy to provide. But if it isn't something that is just kind of straightforward, run-of-the-mill, we're going to have a conversation with you to get to the bottom of it. I actually saw, and I'm not going to name names, you're anonymous if you make a submission, but I did see one gentleman here in the attendees today that did make a submission, and he was very involved in his own diagnosis because you know your field best, you know what you're seeing best, and so having that sort of conversation oftentimes is really key to getting towards a good diagnosis for you.
Well,
And then lastly, you can submit up to 10 pictures. So we wanted to make it so that you weren't limited in the number of pictures you could submit, because sometimes you might want to show the larger patch and then slowly get closer and closer and closer until you end up having to take a close-up, very close-up shot to show us the pattern in the field all the way down to what we're seeing on an individual leaf, for example. Again, very seldom can we make a diagnosis from that submission alone, and oftentimes it will require a conversation. So.
Well, and you bring up a really good point too, and that's a question that just popped up here too. Great question. So, do you have any guidelines, tips, or tricks on how to take the best pictures? What should you include in the pictures, since that is so key? Because again, this is digital crop doc. You're not actually sending in a sample, you're sending in pictures.
Right. Use natural lighting. That's a big one. So that's what's so nice about this program. If you have internet access in the field, even if you don't, you can just add pictures to your submission after the fact as well. But using that natural lighting in your field is really key. We want you to capture both leaf surfaces. Oftentimes, understanding what's going on really requires a look at both top and bottom. We don't want you to forget stems and stalks and even roots. So if you have a wilt disease, for example, knowing whether there are lesions on the stem can help us to come up with a cause of that wilt. If you don't have lesions on the stem, oftentimes we'll ask you to split the stem or stalk, split those roots, and take a picture of that. That can help us as well. Use your Zoom, and don't take pictures of dead plants. That is not going to be of use to us. It's very difficult, even in person, to do a postmortem on plants because we have organisms in our fields that are called saprophytes, and they can come in after a plant has been killed by a pathogen, and then that kind of complicates what we see in a field. So it's very difficult to attribute a cause when you have other organisms moving in as well.
Oh, great points. And I don't know if you said this already. Is there a cost associated with this when somebody sends in a sample?
We did not mention this. There is not. So if somebody ends up sending in a sample to the disease clinic because we cannot arrive at a visual diagnosis, then there is a fee involved with that. But if just to use digital crop doc, there is no fee.
Okay, that's a great resource. And just curious, before we turn it over to Brett here, what kind of things have you seen submitted to date?
Sure. So our first submission was pretty interesting. It came from Clay County up here near Moorhead. And a person had split a corn stalk and sent in a sample of the internal workings of his corn stalk. I think it was a submission born of a person that just hadn't seen a lot of corn stalks. So ironically, our first submission was of a perfectly healthy corn stalk. But that's important information as well. It's important to know that your crop is doing okay sometimes too. We've seen bacterial blight in soybeans. We have had many tar spot in corn submissions, potassium deficiency in soybean, IDC, iron deficiency, chlorosis, spider mite infections, even lesion mimic mutants in corn. And it's anybody can make a submission. It's limited to folks in Minnesota, so we can't take those submissions from India and Florida that come in, unfortunately. But you know, it's nice to know that people have an interest in figuring out what's going on in their fields.
Yeah, this is a really great resource. And again, we'll have the links on how to get to the Digital Crop Doc. But like you said, you can just do a search on your internet, type in Digital Crop Doc. There's a link off of our Extension Crops website to get to this as well. So thank you, Angie. Now, if you want to hold on here, we do have the recording from Dr. Ahrens, and he is the director at the Crop Disease Clinic. Because sometimes you can't necessarily figure out just from a picture, you actually need to send it in. So we did have, again, a pre-recorded segment with Brett. And if you want to run that would be great. Well, Brett, thanks for joining us today. And why don't we have you talk a little bit about the Plant Disease Clinic? You want to just start with kind of explaining what you all do there and what it's all about and so forth?
Sure thing. So the Plant Disease Clinic is a service lab at the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus, and it first opened in 1956 to really, it seems, take some of the burden off some of the plant pathology faculty who were getting a lot of requests from homeowners, farmers in Minnesota to diagnose plant samples. So they wanted to set up a centralized laboratory that could handle some of this. At first it was only open during the summer, run by graduate students. In the last 20 or 30 years, I should say, it has been become basically a year-round lab. And we're fairly small, about three full-time members. And we are basically just across from the state fairgrounds. If you're listeners are familiar with that location. We specialize in plant disease diagnosis, although we do say that we diagnose plant health problems, because about 20-30% of our diagnoses are actually no pathogen found. And so this could be a variety of other things going on. It could be a nutrient issue. It could be some sort of environmental problem, frost damage. It could be herbicide drift, things like that. So there are, of course, many other issues besides plant diseases that cause plants to look unhealthy. And of course, the reason people are sending them to us is because they don't know. And we really work with all kinds of plants. I think in a typical year, we get about 2,000 or so total samples submitted, and usually representing about over 150 different plant host species, ranging from trees, shrubs, ornamentals, annuals, crops, obviously corn, soybean. So really almost anything you can grow in Minnesota, certainly we might see at a certain point. We also get samples from other states as well.
Well, that's so for a landowner or farmer, it's not only the field crops that they could send in if they got something funny going on in the yard with their trees, it all can go to the same place, and that's kind of a nice deal there. But since we're talking about samples, do you have any recommendations like when people are sending in a sample? I'm assuming you don't want them to just throw it in a plastic bag and send it snail mail or something like that. Do you have some recommendations on what they should do and how that should be handled?
Yeah, that's a great question. We accept samples either hand delivered here to the lab or sent in by the mail. Obviously, we're down in the metro area, so usually the people who are hand delivering are people who are living down here anyway. And we do have information about how to sample from plants, what kinds of things to mail in at our website, pdc.umn.edu. I will say, though, just for some general guidelines, that typically you want to focus on the area of concern of the plants, the area where you're getting the strongest symptoms, and sample from there. If possible, it's always best to supply a whole plant. So that would be above and below ground parts. For some diseases or health problems, you might have symptoms in the leaves, for example. But the pathogen might actually be located in the roots. And so if a client just submitted the leaves, we wouldn't really have a way of confirming that pathogen unless the roots themselves were also submitted. And if you're mailing in a whole plant, what we do recommend is wrap the roots in plastic and then leave the above ground parts maybe loosely wrapped in newspaper. You don't need to add any moisture to the situation, no wet paper towels or anything like that. Because of course, things sometimes can sit in the mail for a bit of time, and they can get pretty nasty by the time they get to us if they're held over the weekend or something like that. Mailing samples usually good to mail maybe at the start of the week rather than at the end, just so that they'll get to us earlier. It's good to send living plants, so plants that have clear disease symptoms but have not yet totally died. There are plants where that are very hard to do autopsies on. For example, soybeans. Actually, there's a lot of soybean diseases that can certainly cause plant health problems during the field season. But also, they tend to grow really well on the dead soybeans after the fact, even if they didn't cause a problem during the season. And so, when people send dead soybeans in, it can be pretty tricky to know if something is just growing on it because the plant has died, or if it actually was a problem during the field season.
Well, those are
Obviously,
definitely
in
good
a lot of
points.
cases, it's not always possible to submit a whole living plant, depending on the type of plant you're talking about. Obviously, you're talking about a tree that's not realistic in most cases, unless it's a nursery sending seedlings in or something like that. So in those cases, we oftentimes will have people send us pictures first to our email, which is pdc@umn.edu. And then we can better direct them to what kinds of tissue would be good to collect.
Well, that's a good point. And you're talking about the whole plant, like with the roots. Do they need to include any soil in that? If they're suspecting like a seedling disease or something, or would you prefer keep that off of there?
Not typically. There's not a lot we can do with the soil itself. So you could loosely knock off the soil from the roots and then wrap that root mass in a plastic bag and tie it off. That being said, the really only thing we do with soil would be if you are asking for a nematode test, and we're trying to give a general sort of count of plant pathogenic nematodes in a given quantity of soil. In that case, we would directly use a soil sample, and you wouldn't even really need to supply a plant sample with that kind of submission.
So you mentioned nematodes. I know that we have a soybean cyst nematode clinic, and I believe that's still going in Waseca, correct? But so is that when you're talking about nematodes, are you talking about soybean cyst nematode as well, or are you talking about nematodes other than soybean cyst nematode?
Yeah, so basically any other nematode other than the soybean cyst nematode. If you want soybean cyst nematode testing, you should send it to the lab in Waseca at the Southern Outreach Station.
Okay, yep, just wanted to clarify that for everybody listening today. And is this open to anybody to send in a sample? I mean, do you have to be in the state? Do you have, does it matter if you're a crop consultant or farmer or
We accept samples from anyone, and about 80%, 90% of our samples come from Minnesota. The rest come from outside, from Iowa, Wisconsin, even farther out, New York, Ohio, in some cases. So we do have, I'll just, we accept samples from a wide range of clientele, from homeowners to farmers, crop consultants, tree care specialists, professional horticultural organizations and companies. Government agencies, we get samples from the MDA, from the Forest Service, from the DNR. So really just a very wide range of clientele.
okay, that's great. And then the fees, do you have like a fee list? Not that you have to list all those off. I don't expect you to have that all memorized, but I'm assuming there's fees with this. It's not all free probably, but maybe you have some research programs. I know in the past, like Dean Melvick, he's our extension plant pathologist. Sometimes he has some programs going. Do you have information about that, or how would a person learn more about that?
Yeah, we do charge fees with our diagnoses, and there's a better list of them on the Plant Disease Clinic website, but they range from about $50 to maybe a little bit more than $100 or so, depending on what kind of testing is needed. $50 covers most routine testing, examination with the microscope, things like that. If it needs more sort of molecular work, like DNA extraction, RNA extraction, analysis in that way. Typically, these are like viral samples, in some cases, maybe bacterial samples that you can't actually confirm just with the microscope. Those would be samples that would be more likely to be around the $100 range.
Okay. And that kind of ties in with the next question I'm thinking of as well here is, a lot of times there's not just one thing going on in the field. So, what would you recommend if somebody's trying to diagnose a problem and they're pretty sure they know what it is? I mean, do you see, I guess, way to word this would be, do you see sometimes there's more than one thing going on in the plants? I mean, if you're pretty sure, would you still recommend sending something in just to really help get it identified? Because, again, just by visual, how accurate can we be just by what we see sometimes?
Yeah, that's a great question. My general philosophy is that successful disease control starts with a accurate diagnosis. There are some diseases that are fairly easy for people to diagnose themselves. I'm thinking of like the powdery mildews, white mold on soybean, things like that, tar spot of maple. These are things that you can pretty easily identify with the naked eye without a microscope, and you can be pretty confident in those. And as it turns out, we don't tend to get a lot of those samples in the disease clinic, even though they're fairly common in most years, because people can typically diagnose themselves. But for a lot of other ones, there are many diseases with very similar symptoms, look-alike conditions. Oak wilt, for example, is one of our more common types of samples in the metro. Causes leaves to kind of become marginally brown at the edges. Well, as it turns out, there's a few other things that can do that as well, including two-line chestnut borer, drought stress, other foliar pathogens of oak. But if you just looked at your tree and assumed it had oak wilt without testing it, you might pursue a pretty costly management plan that would result in no no help, or maybe it would just be a waste of money because really what you're dealing with maybe was an insect problem or drought stress, for example. So certainly in situations where you are investing money into management and time, I would really recommend starting with an official diagnosis.
Yep, good point. And just curious, I mean, what kind of, when thinking about agronomic crops, what kind of are some of the most commonly submitted diseases that you see? Just again, just kind of of interest.
Yeah, so obviously Minnesota, we get a lot of corn and soybean samples, and it depends a bit on the year. Every year is a little bit different. Obviously, last year we had very dry conditions throughout most of the year, especially the later half of the year. As a consequence, a lot of the fungal diseases that were kind of common usually just we didn't really see them last year, and instead we had more issues like spider mites, for example, that can kind of get out of control with really hot and dry conditions. With the corn and soybean, there's a long list of kind of common diseases. With soybean, it kind of goes through we in the roundabout this time of year, we start seeing seedlings with damping off issues, whether it's Phytophthora, Pythium rhizoctonia, or maybe a herbicide issue or something like that. And then, as you get into the middle part of the summer, don't see so many soybeans coming in, but then the later part, more of the late season soybean issues like Sudden Death Syndrome, brown stem rot, things like that. So there's kind of a seasonality to it. Corn, in some cases where it's really dry, you're not really seeing a lot of corn submissions. So it'll be interesting to see if this this moisture kind of continues through the year. But things like northern corn leaf blight. A few years ago, we were getting a lot of Goss's wilt samples into the clinic when that was kind of a fairly new pathogen. It kind of depends on what's going on, what's hot. Corn tar spot, obviously, people are trying to figure out exactly where it is in Minnesota as it's kind of moving around, and so that will result in us getting more samples. And then as a pathogen kind of settles into an area, people become more familiar with it, and oftentimes I think can kind of diagnose it themselves.
Yeah, you mentioned tar spot, and that's kind of one of those diseases where, yeah, I'm sure we hope you don't have a lot of samples come in, because then that means that it's more prevalent in the state. But I'm sure you've been a big help in really helping find out, yes, it actually is tar spot, and because that's one that's expanding in the state here. And just curious too, do you send out reports of what you are finding? Is that put out for general information anywhere?
So that's a really good question. What's kind of interesting about our clinic at the University of Minnesota is that we're not actually an official part of the extension program at the University of Minnesota, which is not the case for a lot of other plant disease clinics in other states where they are actually official extension. And so I would say those kinds of clinics are more oftentimes involved in that outreach directly, sending out reports of what they've been seeing and things like that. For us, we're really concentrating on the individual samples we're getting and getting good diagnoses out and management recommendations to the people who are submitting samples. But we will also work with people in the DNR, with the MDA, with other extension specialists like Dean Malvick to share the information that we've been seeing so that we can collaborate on these, for example, the corn tar spot situation to figure out what counties it's been found in and how it's sort of moving throughout the state.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And as we wrap it up here, is there anything else that you want to add on before we wrap it up today?
No, not really. Just to say that if you have a question about something, as I mentioned, we can test basically any type of plant for almost any type of disease. But if you have a particular question, please feel free to email us at pdc@umn.edu, and we're happy to take up the conversation from there.
All right, that sounds great. And we'll be sure to post that in our chat here today too, those website links, so people can pull that up. But again, thanks for joining us today, Brad. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much.
Anyway, I know we're getting long on the time a little bit here. Angie, is there anything that you wanted to add to wrap this up? Because again, we're focusing on these identification tools, because that is the number one thing, is to get the correct diagnosis of what it is before you can actually manage that disease effectively. But anything that you want to add here at the end?
No, other than that, this is a free service. Not every submission will be able to be diagnosed visually. It might require a little audience participation in having a conversation with us to arrive at the diagnosis, but it's something that we were able to stand up during the pandemic through funding from today's webinar and podcast sponsors as well, Minnesota Soybean, Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Councils. And so it's still going strong, and so use it if it's something that could provide some answers for you.
That's great. Well, thank you, Angie, and thank you everybody for attending today. And again, that's a digital crop doc. That's the free service, kind of pre-screens if you need to go on to the crop disease clinic or not. And that's another great resource that we do offer at the university. And again, I'd like to thank everybody for attending today's session and thank our sponsors, the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council and the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council.